So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 77. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Biggs, for real this time. As always, I'm Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi, everyone.
We also have Caitlin with us this week. Hey, Caitlin.
Hola.
Hola. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at rradiopodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook page, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free.
Woohoo!
I know, Phasma and Princess Leia are pretty awesome. Anyway,
Dunya? Yeah, we've also launched a Patreon, so if you don't want to sign up as an Audible affiliate, but do still want to support us, you can do so through our Patreon, which is patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. You do get perks if you donate to us every month, one of them being our Discord chat, where we talk about pretty much everything from Star Wars itself to hockey to Voltron to whatever we feel like in the moment. You can also listen to us while we record our episodes in the recording studio. Join us for our movie nights where we record audio commentary for films. We just wrapped up episode 2, which was entertaining, to say the least. we also do After Dark episodes where we kind of like take our off-topicness and actually go full-on off-topic. We've got 2 up that are available, but 1 anyone can listen to. So if you want to try before you buy, so to speak, you can listen to our first After Dark episode, which is called Potter Wars, where we discuss Star Wars' 40th anniversary, Harry Potter 20th anniversary, and kind of do some comparisons between the two. If you can't afford to support us via Patreon, we do also have merchandise for sale up on our website, so you can get a really sweet looking t-shirt and some button packs from there. And even if it's not for you, buy one for a friend, or tell your friends and family about us. Go out on the streets, tell everyone about us.
On to the news. So, I may have last week.
I'm still on the podcast, so that I haven't been thrown out on my ass yet for last week's episode.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, moving on to the news. So last week was all about Colin Trevorrow saying bye-bye. Say goodbye is what the episode was called. This week we have a new director, but he's not a new director. He's a director that we've seen before. J.J. Abrams. What do you guys think about him coming back to the franchise?
I mean, so the way I'm viewing this is the same way that I would see a TV show, that they kind of want some consistency at this point in time to just see the trilogy out. So it makes a lot of sense to bring J.J. back. Maybe not the person that I would have first assumed, but it's not like the worst decision. It's kind of just very, it's safe, it's consistent, it's fine. I like The Force Awakens, so it's not like I have anything against him particularly. It just, yeah, I mean, it's fine.
It's a fine decision.
Yeah, it's a fine decision.
I'm actually happy. I was actually surprised that it was him. I didn't think he would be in the running so much, just because, you know, he originally said he didn't want to do any more, like he was going to do one. But then he said, I kind of wish I hadn't said that because I would like to do another one, you know, at different times. Yeah. So it makes sense.
Apparently Rian Johnson was the first choice, but he decided not to forward doing another one.
Well,
possibly because they're so close together. I mean, he's been...
Back to back would be really hard.
Yeah, so it's kind of one of those things where, like, these films, there's so much expectation on them. There's so much of yourself that you have to put into these films. And I'm not saying it's not the same for like any other film, but it's so intense, so full on, especially because he's still got a media tour to do with like interviewing about everything. And sometimes if you're going, because they go straight into each other in order to be able to turn it around, it's so intense. So intense. So I'm not actually that surprised that both JJ and Ryan, like, immediately after finishing their films, were like, no, you know what, maybe I don't want to move on to the next one. Maybe I want to take a little bit of time away. Because even for, like, even if for us, it's been a while between the trilogy films. Like,
it's not, because they're working on them. Like, he's still working on Last Jedi right now. For him to even fathom working on another one of that magnitude, like,
yeah,
it's got to be like, okay, what, really? So I get it, but I'm glad JJ's back. I think he'll finish it out strong, and I think, like you said, consistency is going to be key here.
Well, isn't that something similar that happened when Harry Potter was filming? Either it was Christopher Columbus or it was another director wanted to do another one, but wanted a film in between for a break, and they kind of said, no, we're going to continue, and so that's when they started getting all the different directors until they hit David Yates.
Yeah, and even then, like, Yates was just like, you know, hey, you know, we're going to do this, and it's kind of like, it's, think about, like, even, we've talked about Avatar and even the Lord of the Rings on this show before, you know, they're shooting back to back to back to back, and having a release in between while shooting, that's difficult. Not only for the actors, who obviously do a press tour and then start filming again, but also for, you know, the director who is involved in not only the directing of it and the editorial of it, but also the writing, the pre-production. Like, they're involved in every single step of it, so they're there the whole time, so there's just no time off. So, I, you know, like I said, I'm happy JJ's doing it. I think he'll do a good job, and I'm not really worried about the trilogy right now. I'm happy with it. My only concern that I have is, it sounds like Rian Johnson is bringing in other characters and is going in a darker, you know, a darker path, kind of like this trilogy's Empire Strikes Back. You know, he's also introduced characters like Rose and Paige. I wonder if J.J. Abrams is going to take those characters. And again, I don't know if those characters survive. Maybe they don't. But I wonder if J.J. Abrams is going to utilize those characters, or is he going to focus on just his characters that he created,
you know, that he worked with. I would say that he will probably utilize them fine. I can't imagine that Rian Johnson isn't going to have any input at all, and that they're not going to talk to each other. So I would imagine that in some way, even if it's not with an official credit at the end, Rian is still going to be involved in some way, shape, or form, just like, not as director. So I can't imagine that J.J. Abrams is that self-centered and conceited that he would just scrap someone else's characters entirely just to focus on his own. Considering the fact that by virtue, he's playing in someone else's universe already. So I wouldn't imagine that that's something that he'd do.
And I know they're still working on it, but correct me if I'm wrong, is the script not already written? They're just tweaking it and adjusting
for episode 9?
Yeah. So just to kind of put episode 9, what we know about episode 9 is there was a treatment. So there was a general outline of what was going to happen. And it was supposed to be Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia's, like, big movie. She was going to be front and center. But as it turns out, with that, they had to, you know, rethink of how that was going to happen. And they had Colin Trevorrow write a script, and then they had brought in Jack Thorne to redo that script. And now they have, you know, J.J. Abrams and, who's he writing it with? Who's he writing it with?
Hold on. I'm pulling it up. It's,
Well, J.J. Abrams is writing it, but he's also writing it with the guy who did, I know he did Justice League, Chris Terrio.
Terrio.
He did Justice League, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. So he's co-writing it with Chris Terrio, which obviously, there's once they get that done, there'll be revisions and stuff like that too. But it's one of those things where it should be an interesting finishing. And at the same time, like I will say, the storyline of Batman versus Superman was not horrible. If people want to see it, the execution of it was pretty bad. But the story, I will say, my biggest problem with it was the whole idea of Martha being the thing that ties them together. That's kind of a weak, it's grasping at straws. But, I'm okay. We'll see. I like JJ's Force Awakens. People complain about Force Awakens being too similar to the original trilogy as a whole. But I think it's the perfect film to get someone introduced into the franchise if they've never seen a Star Wars film. Like, I think it's the perfect film because it does set up like who Luke Skywalker was, who Han Solo was, all these things. And then you're like, oh, I want to know more about these characters. And then you go back and watch the original trilogy. Especially for people who...
Absolutely.
So I think he did the right job.
We've even had people on the podcast before where Force Awakens was their first real Star Wars film that made them even interested in the franchise.
Yeah.
Unless you're like horrifically gatekeeping the fandom because no, you must keep Star Wars pure and it's just the original fans who should be here. It's like, it doesn't work like that. It's never worked like that. And The Force Awakens did exactly what it did to do, which was bring that love back for a lot of people and ignite it in a whole new generation of fans. It's almost exactly what the prequels never managed to do. Because there was such a huge amount of time between the original trilogy and the prequels, and really what the prequels just didn't do was it certainly didn't reignite the fandom in the way that The Force Awakens has. And regardless of like criticisms that you may have about the film, like this era of Star Wars that we're living in right now is incredible. It's almost as it's just insane. It's absolutely insane. Like, the merchandise, just, it's everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. You can't turn and look and just not see Star Wars. So, did exactly what it needed to do. But, yeah, so, the bit that was buried in this, like, the whole thing with, like, J.J. Abrams, like, yeah, fine, I have nothing against him particularly. And I liked Force Awakens, so, yeah. On the whole, I'm just like, yeah, sure, cool, fine. I get it for consistency's sake, wanting to keep either Ryan or JJ. Fine. The bit that was really exciting for me in this is that Jack Thorne has been quietly removed from every single press release to do with Episode 9. So he's gone.
I'm okay with that. I am okay. I didn't want any,
perfectly fine with that. Everyone knows.
As much as I love Harry Potter, I didn't want a time turner to show up in, Star Wars and Luke's father being Rey being the mother to Shumi. I didn't want something weird like that happening.
Who's Rey's father? Everyone is Rey's father.
Oh, God.
Are they going to the future and, because it's the Last Jedi, so it's not either Rey or Luke. They go into the future to find the Last Jedi.
I'm fine with Jack Thorne being off the project. I mean, I made my thoughts abundantly clear about both Colin Trevorrow and Jack Thorne last week. So I'm perfectly content with not having either of those people involved with this film in any way at all. And the issues that may have occurred with Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice with Chris Terrio working on it, potentially, we don't know where those issues stemmed from, because I mean there's a certain amount of like working on a script that once it gets to other people's hands, like that can still change a lot. Even if you still get a credit. So I have full faith that with Abrams and Lucasfilm involved as well, it's going to work out fine. But yeah, would I still like a woman involved somewhere along the line? Yeah, absolutely. But this is absolutely not the worst outcome. In fact, it's course corrected slightly for me personally.
No, it's definitely, you know, I will tell you this, with Ron Howard taking over Han Solo and JJ taking over this, like, I have faith in the Star Wars franchise. I think, you know, Kathleen Kennedy has done exactly what is right for the franchise. Like, she's protecting, and she really is protecting, as much as I would have loved to have, like, a George Lucas or someone else come in. I thought it would have been fun. It would have been fun. You know, and right now we have a, you know, Brack, who's one of our Patreon members, saying they have no problem with Abrams, just not super excited about him either. And it's really one of those things where, you know, it's Abrams. We've seen him before. I'm excited to see where the story goes. I think that's probably the biggest piece of it. But speaking of The Force Awakens, getting people into Star Wars, if you don't own the Star Wars trilogy or the original films, the 1 through 6, on Blu-ray, right now is the best time to buy it. This article came from USA Today talking about how crazy cheap they are, and they actually are very cheap on Blu-ray on Amazon right now. I've posted links on our website, which actually will support us, but if you go to our website, you have three options. You can actually get the Star Wars Complete Saga 1 through 6 Blu-ray full box set for $74.99, which is normally like $130. Or if you don't care about all the really cool extras that are in that, you can actually just pick up episode 1 through 3 for $30 and episode 4 through 6 for $30. That's both a Blu-ray and DVD combo set. So if you don't own them or multiple copies like I do, I'm sure Danya and Caitlin too. But if you don't own them, right now is a great time to get them. I was really surprised when I saw this. What do you guys think about the price cut on these right now?
That's great for you, America.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. You're what? For the Canadian and the European. I'm sorry. So in America, you can get them cheap. If you live elsewhere, sorry. You got to live in America. You got to live in America. America. America.
A 75-cent difference for me, so.
Well, there you go. Got to live in America for them.
Yeah.
But hey, I thought it was pretty cool that popped up. Oh, Danya's pointing out that I completely glossed over the fact with J.J. Abrams directing that the release date for episode 9 has also moved, which I'm very excited for. And I totally just screwed up our document.
Casually in this show notes doc, making the text like gradually bigger on the release date bit and bolding it.
All right. You know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Danya. It's rainy here. Irma's made it out this way, so it's been raining nonstop. It's not bad. It's not bad where I'm at. It's supposed to dissipate here. But Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Star Wars, you know, Last Jedi wakes from his nap, you know. Star Wars wakes from his nap. I don't know. Episode 9 has release date. It's been moved from the May 2019 release date to December 20th. 2019. So I kind of figured this would happen, especially with all the crazy change-ups when it comes to change-ups when it comes to directors. I'm still surprised they haven't changed Han Solo though. Maybe they're going to try to stick to that May release date.
I doubt it. It's going to happen at some point. I think probably after all of this, they're gonna probably wait a little bit. At the moment, they're still filming bits of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're still filming. They haven't wrapped filming yet.
Yeah. So I would imagine that they will probably wait until they finished all of that up to kind of get a better sort of gauge of where they're at in respect to wrapping this bit of filming, because it's quite extensive reshoots. We know because like actors have left and they're having to bring new characters in. So there's quite substantial reshoots in a way that is different to the reshoots to Rogue One, because it is actually fundamentally changing the story. And we know that there were issues with tone. We know that there were issues with Alden Ehrenreich's portrayal of Han, so probably quite a lot of stuff is going to have to be reshot for that. So we don't know the extent of how much was unusable. But yeah, I would imagine that Ron Howard is probably working on getting it to a point where they're able to judge whether or not they can still make that release date or not.
Yeah,
it's unlikely, but
Ron Howard has this amazing record of being able to be a studio director and do stuff like that, especially if they've planned around post-production, specifically the visual effects work. So I know they've also cut out a whole CGI characters too. And I'm assuming that's to go ahead and make sure they hit that May release date. So characters that were supposed to be CGI because actors couldn't come back are now being played by someone else as a human character versus a CGI character.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the other part of it is like, well, they haven't even hit post-production yet.
Well, but there's all, but there's all, but there was also that, there was also a rough cut of it already and stuff like that before he came on. So, you know, it's a matter of changing scenes out, pacing, here's the thing, like, for anyone who's actually edited a film, whether it be a student film or a feature film, like, once you have a rough cut and there's certain things that work and certain things that don't work, simply alternating, you know, switching clips out, you know, alternate shots, alternate takes, isn't going to take as long as if you were assembling it for the very first time. Plus, Ron Howard's work style, he's got, you know, DITs on set that are doing rough cuts same day for him, which are pretty amazing, like, with his workflow.
I would say that even without the CGI characters, the CGI alien, the visual effect work on something like Star Wars is insane. So there's a lot of that that still has to be done.
Yeah, well, we'll see, because this, you know, the reason why I bring it up is the next article I bring up kind of almost relates to that. And the reason why I'm wondering what the May date might stick. But so we have the titles for Star Wars Rebels Season 4. And there's a couple things that happened with Star Wars Rebels Season 4 that kind of confused me. And maybe you can shed some light on this, Danya. Is one, the release time. So, first of all, the premiere of Star Wars Rebels Season 4 will premiere Monday, October 16th at 12:30 a.m. Now, as a kid's show, I would be surprised that it would appear just after midnight. But, you know, that's what it's doing. It's premiering at 12:30 a.m. with repeated broadcasts at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., 5:30 a.m., 5:30 p.m., and 9 p.m. Why is it premiering at such a late time?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So they didn't specify in this, but are they releasing it like maybe 12:30 Eastern Standard Time? So then, like, is that for every single time zone?
No, that's so any time. I'll throw this out there. So anytime that an article is written, if it doesn't specify time zone, it's Eastern time. Because all release times and dates in press releases are typically given to you in Eastern time.
Okay.
So this is probably Eastern time, and it will, because it's on Disney XD, it may be simulcast, or it may just be that it's the same time, Eastern time, and then Pacific time, it's also 12:30 a.m.
Well, that's why I was asking, because I was like, okay, is it 12:30, like, here, and then, like, Pacific time, they would have to wait 3 hours, or is it going to be, like, 9:30 p.m.?
Typically, Disney XD being the cable network that it is, it's like HBO. You have to wait till the actual time, so you can't catch, you know, Game of Thrones at 10 o'clock, really at like 7 o'clock on Pacific time. You know, when it airs at the same time, unless you have like the Eastern channel for some reason or something like that. But typically, yeah, Disney XD is a single channel; and they're all released at the same time.
So, because I was trying to like. Sounds like a weird time, but maybe like if it, you know, only, what I mean? If it was
the only theory I have for this is they wanted it because I know a good chunk of their people don't have Disney XD, the people that watch it, and they get digital versions of it through iTunes and Amazon and stuff like that. I almost wonder if they wanted it to release earlier on those platforms. Because those platforms would be 12 hours later, which would put it right around, you know, noon, which is after it's already premiered or so like that. So that's the only thing I can think of is they wanted to release on digital closer to like an actual premiere time for everyone else. But you could stay up. But beyond that, we also have learned the titles of the episode of season 4. So if you don't want to be spoiled, you can cover your ears for about 2 minutes while I go through some of these. The premiere episode is actually a two-parter called Heroes of Mandalore. And that's going to be on October 16th. And then episode 3, third and fourth episode, is also a two-parter, The Name of the Rebellion, or In the Name of the Rebellion. And that's going to drop on October 24th, so a week later. And then the fifth and sixth episodes will premiere on the 30th, so again, 3 weeks later. The fifth is called The Occupation, and the sixth is called Flight of the Defender. So there's the first six episodes released, you know, 3 days, 3 weeks, but it's only a, was it, 12 episodes, 16 episode season. That's almost halfway through within the first 3 weeks. The only thing I can think of is they're trying to actually push through a bunch of Rebels before we see the Han Solo film, which would be May, because they usually take a break in the middle of the season. What do you think about that idea, Danya?
I mean, it makes sense. I don't know. It's really interesting because I guess the time frame that we're in, a lot of Rebels is going to overlap with these characters that we know already exist in the universe. So, you know, we've already seen Leia. So, it seems like they're rushing it, right? Yeah, it wouldn't be too surprising either that they're trying to wrap it up before Han Solo, or they've got something that they want to. They either want Han Solo to tie into Rebels or Rebels to tie into Han Solo.
See, what I'm thinking is, I'm almost wondering, and this is me purely speculating, so this is not me knowing anything more. Maybe it is. No, it's not. But I'm almost wondering if they're trying to wrap it up so that way after the Han Solo film, they'll release some new show. Like maybe a Han Solo Lando buddy cop animated film. How cool would it be? Or Han and Chewie. And Lando just becomes like, we've already seen Lando in Rebels. Like, come on. Billy Dee's all for doing the voice.
I think
it's something similar to that, but it's a different character group from Han Solo movie. It's not Han Solo. It's not Lando. It's not Chewie. But it's other characters from
that. See, I'd prefer that.
Okay, I'll take that.
Because I feel like if we're going to have a Han Solo movie and we have to get it, I kind of want this to be it. I don't know that I could take a whole series as well.
Well, but then maybe that's it. Maybe it's, you know, something to tie into the Han Solo film that's not Han Solo himself, but, you know, a animated series revolving around, you know, whatever we see in that Han Solo film, who knows? So I would not be surprised at that, because you think about like Clone Wars was tying between 2 and 3, but obviously that didn't come out till well after that was done. But Rebels kind of tied right, you know, we knew it was tying right into Rogue One. Like we saw Chopper on screen. We heard General Syndulla, you know, like, all these things, and obviously it's going past it, so you're past that. And I don't think they were like intending for Rebels to just be a perfect tie into Rogue One when that kind of happened. But I feel like they're kind of seeing it, and they're kind of wanting to do something more. So I wouldn't be surprised, especially with we knowing Rebels is ending, that something's coming next year, and it's going to tie into the Han Solo or be an adventure that's its own thing. So I don't know. That's me maybe being wishful thinking. Anyway, moving on, we have information about the Star Wars novelization, which is really interesting. The new Star Wars novelization for The Last Jedi won't be released until March 2018. Now, the film is obviously being released December 15th, but the film is not being released till March 6th, 2018, which is very different from The Force Awakens novelization, as well as the Rogue One novelization that both hit stores the day of the release. What do you guys make of this?
Entirely possible that there's very big information coming in the film that they don't want to get out, because a lot of people get arcs for books for reviewing. So it's very likely that they don't want that to get out in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. The only thing I can think of is that you saw this with the Force Awakens novelization, and you even said this, Sonia, that you don't always take the novelizations as canon,
even though they're usually based on earlier script versions.
That's exactly it. So I'm almost wondering if the novelization isn't being released because they've had script revisions, or like you said, or even just like hidden information that had to be that tie into such a big part of what the, you know, surprise of that of the film's going to be, that we just don't, you know, that they just can't release it on time.
Also because we know that they've had to kind of rearrange the story of episode 9, so I wonder if the novelization, they're going to change it a little bit because General Leia will no longer be a character for episode 9.
Yeah,
or a distant character.
And it could also be that they might wrap that up in, you know, whatever happens in episode, you know, in episode 9 or 8, whatever they happens in episode 8, that where her possible death, you might actually see ramifications of it in the novelization. So that way there's no question when episode 9 comes out. So you don't know, but it is interesting that it's not going to be released at the same time. I can only imagine what's happening. I'm getting like really excited for The Last Jedi. Like, I'm getting really excited. I don't know about you guys.
I'm trying not to think about it, because then I can't deal with waiting another 3 months or four. What are we at now?
We're at September 9. Got to go to 12, so got to go 4 more months. And actually, it's almost 4 months exactly, because the film would be released, you know, if they do an early screening tomorrow in 4 months. So a day in 4 months. Anyway, moving on. The last bit of news here, Donnie, I'm going to have you take this because I'm a little confused.
You're a little confused.
It's Mark Hamill.
So it's just something that was a little bit of fun that I thought was kind of hilarious. So a couple of days ago, someone sent Mark Hamill a tweet asking if he was a Wolves fan. Mark Hamill liked the tweet, thinking that they meant the animal. You know, as most people outside of the UK probably would. However, Wolves is the nickname of the Wolverhampton Wanderers football team that play in the Championship League over here in the UK. By football, I mean soccer. That football. So, a couple of news articles came out saying that Mark Hamill supports Wolves, Wolverhampton Wanderers. And it kind of turned into a crazy, ridiculous thing. So, he was like, I like this tweet about Wolves, thinking they meant the animal. Now they're my favorite team that I've never heard of. There have been some crazy edits of, like, Ray handing him a Wolves shirt, like the kit, the football kit, instead of his lightsaber. There's been, like, edits of Luke Skywalker in the crowd of like a Wolves match and stuff like that. It's just kind of gotten like crazy out of hand, to the point where he actually gained over 5,000 followers in one day for basically being like, I'm a Wolves fan. It's just so funny to me. But he's like been just like talking back and forth with Wolverhampton Wanderers fans, including a podcast called The Wolves Fancast. And it just in the way that the internet does and Mark Hamill does, it kind of got out of hand very, very quickly. And for someone who supports a lot of football over here, just it was really, really hysterical that this happened.
In football, you mean soccer?
Yes. I've already established that. I already established that.
I know. I get it. I was just surprised it wasn't hockey when I read the article. So that's why I was like, I'll let you take it because it makes more sense coming from you.
Hockey season's about to start, though, so brace yourself, Mikey.
Anyway, let's go ahead and move to our spotlight topic. How about that? Yeah. Move on to our spotlight topic. So our spotlight topic is 2 weeks running, none other than Mr. Biggs Darkletter, Mr. Checkered Helmet himself. So, real quick, for those of you who don't know who Biggs is, because he is a relatively, he's not a small character, but he plays a very small role on film, if you will. Biggs Darkletter grew up on Tatooine with Luke Skywalker, shared his friend's dream of escaping the dull desert world. He actually went to the Imperial Academy and defected the Empire service to join the rebellion. He and Luke were reunited on Yavin 4's rebel base, and they flew together against the Death Star. Luke returned from that mission a hero, but Biggs did not survive.
Too soon.
I know, Biggs. Oh no, Luke! At that speed, we'll be able to pull out in time, just like Biggers Canyon back home, Biggs. Like, come on, it's Biggs. It's the good old boy, like his buddy, right? So I love Biggs. Like, oh, I know. Well, there's a thought process for me and you to talk about here, Danya. Point D, Biggs versus Wedge, and you can chime in on there. Because you know I love Wedge. Anyway,
it should have been Wedge.
All right, so here. Stop! Will you stop, Danya? Simmer down. Like, I have to rope you in here for this conversation. Like we're not even in like 2 minutes into the conversation, and you're really going crazy. Anyway, thought thing here. So Luke wanted to go to the Toshi Station for some power converters, right? Or Toshi Station for power converters. Do you think Biggs was there?
According to the deleted scene, he was.
That's according to the exactly, and I want to bring that up. So Biggs and his other friends are actually on the Star Wars A New Hope deleted scenes. Him and Luke are hanging out at Toshi Station, and Biggs discuss wanting to defect to the Rebellion, which is really cool because this kind of sets up Luke as a character who wants to fight for the Rebellion and not the Empire early on in the film before we kind of find out anything else about that, before he kind of falls in love with his sister to save her because she's beautiful. And anyway, I digress. But yeah, so Luke is at Toshi Station with Biggs in this deleted scene. And we get to learn a little bit about Biggs, like you said, that he is planning to jump ship with a friend and go to the Rebellion here. So, real quick, Biggs, we only get to see him where him and Luke are going to catch up on Yavin or on the Yavin base after the battle. Any idea of what Luke would feel after the battle, knowing that he never got a chance to catch up with his friend?
I mean, it's probably difficult for them to mourn, if only because there wasn't really enough time. Also, it's still a war, so it's kind of that really horrific mindset that once you're in a war, it's really, really hard to grieve when you know that the next battle is literally right in front of you. So I would imagine that he would feel some grief. I understand why they chose Biggs to die and why they did that, because it's his last tether back to Tatooine. You know, we see the death of his aunt and uncle, and we know that that is what essentially kind of unmoors him from Tatooine. It's his last real responsibility. It's the last thing holding him there. But once he actually gets to Yavin, once he actually joins the Rebellion, even though Biggs is also a very huge part of that rebellion now, and he's fighting for it, he is still something that tethers Luke back to his previous life. And I understand why he had to die over Wedge, because it kind of just, it's that last tie. It's that kind of releasing him from all that and really propelling him much, much further onto this journey. But well, I still hate it.
The fact that, like, keeping in mind when they shot it, originally Biggs was supposed to have more scenes, so even the audience was supposed to have more attachment or understanding of his connection with Luke, so then it was supposed to make the battle seem more real, that anybody could be gone, even friends.
Yeah.
Not just so, random people we don't, like, just see their faces for, right?
The addition of the conversation between Luke and Biggs prior to the trench battle on the Death Star, that is one of the few changes that I feel helped the film rather than hindered it. Because it gave something a little more to Luke. And it was just really interesting, and it made you care about Biggs. Which, I don't know, I just really, really, really liked the potential of him as a character. And in fact, I kind of feel like there was a lot of wasted potential there, particularly with the deleted scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the pacing of those deleted scenes was awful.
And I think that's why they were cut.
And that's why they hit the cutting room floor. Like, I fully respect why that happens. If it had been done in a much smarter way, I think it could have worked a lot better, particularly if Biggs had survived the battle as well, because it's that kind of, there's something about that in a battle with trying to reconcile your responsibilities and your future responsibilities versus a friendship and a connection back to the whole life that you had known prior to this moment. And there is something about that struggle and that conflict that is incredibly interesting to me, particularly as like a sort of to and fro, like battling within Luke himself, that there was so much lost potential in that. But yeah, I don't know. I just, gone way too soon. He's a character that I feel could have been utilized much, much better than he was.
Because I'm going to be honest, like, as a, I guess, 7-year-old, 6-year-old watching this, I never really noticed, like, I mean, you saw that one time, like, that one, like, maybe 30-second clip where Luke and Biggs meet up before they get in to the X-Wings, but that's about it. So I never actually remembered that connection that they had as friends prior to all of this occurring, and that they were friends on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Like, it was just nothing that ever really stuck in my head.
See, for me, the expanded universe is where Biggs really thrived and grew. So he was such a good character that obviously he was only there for such a little bit, but in the expanded universe, he had a cousin named Gavin Darklighter, and he flew with Rogue Squadron, you know, with Wedge. Again, Donya, you know, Wedge carried on Rogue Squadron after Luke left and everything. But this is all in the extended universe, and it was really nice to have, like, his cousin kind of pay homage to Biggs and kind of what happened then, and, you know, and Wedge be able to, you know, even, you know, reflect on Biggs and how Biggs was such a good pilot and stuff like that, like in the extended universe. So that's kind of where I kind of knew from Biggs, like as I kind of, you know, grew up in Star Wars, like the expanded universe, let me see who this character was. It was really like you said, Donya, it was kind of almost a waste of potential, but it is one of those things. It's the last thing that, you know, Luke mentions it. There's nothing left for me here. He's ready to leave with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And sure enough, he meets up with his childhood friend, Biggs, who has connections still on Tatooine. And by even severing that, like, really severs him from any connection to his home, you know, to go back home. You know, it's like the loss of innocence, if you will, that, like, we talked about with Harry Potter when Hedwig died at some point in time. One episode a while ago. But it, you know, I will say, I do hope that Rebels tackles Biggs. You know, they mentioned it in some of their Rebel Recon stuff that they might tackle his defection and coming on. Because there was a whole thing in the in the extended universe, a comic book series of Biggs, you know, and a whole ship, you know, the Rand Eclipse defecting to the Rebel Alliance. So it'd be really cool to see some of those things become canon again, and Biggs kind of have a bigger, you know, part in the story in the future. Now, I will say, Biggs made up one of two additional pilots to go into the Death Star trench at the very end. It was Luke, Biggs, and Wedge. Danya, you have something to say?
What? No.
Okay.
It shouldn't have been Biggs.
So Luke,
but,
Biggs...
But here, here's my question. If Biggs had left, would you have the animosity you have for Wedge to Biggs then?
Oh no, I don't think either of them should have left.
You think they should have both stayed?
Yeah.
I agree, because they both bought into this, you know, the rebellion to save, you mm-hmm. know, to save the Republic from the Empire, who's has a planet destroying, you know, weapon that just destroys a planet like Alderaan, which is a peaceful planet. They have no weapons. You know, anyway, moving on. But yeah, so they go into the trench run. Luke is obviously point on this, which I, you know, as much as I love Star Wars, I always found this kind of funny that Luke is brand new to the squadron. And he's taking point on, like, the most important run. Like, so Biggs, I guess, would do that, no problem, would let him do that, no problem, because he knew him back home, and he's like, you know, this guy, you know, he, Biggs even defended him to Red Leader, you know, on Yavin Base, saying, you know, no, this guy, he's best, you know, best pilot back home. So, like, obviously Biggs knows Luke's good, so definitely let Luke lead the, you know, lead the way here. But what about Wedge? Do you think, like, Wedge just kind of followed him going in, or do you think like Wedge would be like, you know, should have gone first? What do you think about that, Daniel? Like, why did Luke become the leader of this group that went into the Death Star trench versus Biggs or, you know, Wedge?
I mean, realistically speaking, because he's the main character.
Yeah,
there you go. That's the answer. But I always kind of wondered, like, what gave him the authority to do that? You know.
That nothing really gave him the authority to do that, because literally the only thing that was kind of the only thing that was propelling him into that battle, or was allowing them to like put Luke in the battle in the first place, was Biggs's word. That's it. You know, just being like, he can do it.
And Princess Leia probably put him in there, too.
Cause... Well, because I was going to say, he was already dressed up. It was just, that's when the squadron leader came over and went, are you sure?
I mean, I kind of feel that squadron leader a little bit. Being like, yeah. He's never flown. We don't know who he is, yeah. Where he came from, or what the heck.
and that's the thing. Yeah, okay, sure, he's like the best pilot from back home, but has he ever flown an X-Wing?
As far as, like, no, as far as we know, no. He's never done that.
He's so, never flown, actually. Now, in yeah, Luke's like, defense, I've driven... I know we're kind of blending Luke, Biggs, and Wedge here as one entity, because that's kind of the only time that Biggs is on screen. In Luke's defense of never flying an X-Wing before, Caitlin, he did fly a T-16, which is made by Incom, which is the same company that makes the X-Wing. So I'm sure the flight controls are fairly similar between the two.
So, you know. Like, if I drive a car made from whatever name brand and then drive a bus under the same name brand, doesn't mean I can drive the bus. I need a special license for that.
It still has gas and brakes.
Yeah, but there's a reason why some vehicles that have over a certain number of passengers, you need a special license to drive it.
Okay, now we're punching bigger holes in this. Anyway, let's talk about Biggs. So, Biggs, his character, he decided to stick around with Luke when Wedge left after Darth Vader's TIE fighter and the other two TIE pilots showed up behind them in the trench run. You know, Wedge says, you know, Luke actually tells Wedge to get out. He's like, get out of here. You can't do any more for me back there. And he leaves. And he even says, sorry. So, like, but Biggs sticks around. So what do you think about his character like this? Is he a better pilot than Wedge, or is he just sticking with his friend, knowing the risks are higher there?
I mean, I think they all know the risks. That whole run was a suicide run. You know, it's much the same as, like, a lot of a lot of Rogue One, they know going into it that it's very unlikely that they'll come out alive. And so they put together this squadron with the best possible chance to get at least one shot off that'll take down the Death Star. That is their goal. It's very abundantly clear from the second that they go out there that most, if not all of them, are going to fall in pursuit of that. And so the thing with Wedge bailing out that gets me the most is that it's got nothing to do with sacrifice of martyrdom at all. It's mostly that even with his ship unable to do any more for Luke, what he is able to do is, if Luke still has the best chance of getting the shot off, is protect him. And when you are on that mission, you're on that mission. You've gone in there knowing full well what the outcome could or couldn't be. And I'm not advocating for martyrdom, and I'm not advocating for, like, literally putting yourself in the line of fire to, like, just for the purpose of dying. But in that specific instance, when that is your sole mission, when you've been sent out there to kind of make sure that that shot goes off at all costs, then regardless of what this kid says, why bail out? And Biggs, I feel, both the connection that he has to Luke and also that ideal of this bigger mission kept him there regardless. So, yeah. It ultimately is what killed him, but...
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, he stayed, you know... I think he stayed because, like you said, like, it's his commitment to understanding what was going to happen. And, you know, I don't know. I think he was also familiar flying that close to Luke. Biggers Canyon, what we know, canon-wise, yeah, is a very tight canyon on Tatooine. So he's used to the confines and felt like he can maneuver a little bit. I always wondered, and this is about Wedge, I always wondered why didn't Wedge, when he pulled out of the trench run, come back and get behind the TIE fighters? Like, they let him go. That's what they said. Let him go. Stay on the leader. Why didn't he just come back around? But, you know, maybe he could have saved
Good question.
Wedge. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know. Like, he could have saved
but
Biggs.
We know. We do know.
We do know? Why do we know?
Yep. Well, as Donia has been pointing out about Wedge, but you keep insisting that he's a great guy, so...
Well, you know what? No, you know, this is Mikey's theory about why Wedge didn't do it. Iden Versio was chasing after an X-Wing pilot, and she was able to survive the Death Star attack. So maybe Iden Versio in her TIE fighter got behind Wedge, and Wedge was trying to, you know, shake her the whole time so he can go back and help Luke. Maybe, or that was it.
I'm going to be on it. Like, if we're going there, it's also, as you said, war and death. And he probably wasn't thinking of that. He was probably thinking, I can't help. Let's get out of here. And it didn't occur to him that he could turn back. Like, it's just one of those things you can't
turn back around. Get behind it. No, I know. Yeah. I know. Anyway, so Biggs was, you know, shot by Darth Vader's ship. And the last words that he heard to Luke, that he said, was, hurry up, Luke, wait. And his X-Wing got destroyed. So, you know, at this point, you know, Luke is all by himself, and Biggs' sacrifice has given him a moment to, I guess, a reprieve, if you will, just a moment to kind of get a little bit further along. And then Luke turns off his, you know, targeting computer. You know, I don't know. It's just, Biggs is just such an important character, because without him taking the first shot from Vader, you know, like, I don't think Luke could have, even with the Force with him, Han couldn't have come and saved him at the end. Like, without Biggs, the Death Star would have destroyed Rebel Base, I think. You agree? No? Maybe?
Hmm.
Well, okay, story-wise, like, in the universe, maybe. Written-wise, there would have been some reason that Luke
It's just like, why was Luke... It's the same argument, like, well, why was Luke leading the group of three of them into the Death Star?
Yeah, exactly.
It's because he was the lead character in the film. Like, I get those things. But these are the things that my brain thinks about when it comes to Star Wars. I treat it like real life, okay? It's not my fault that I'm a Jedi in real life. I mean, I want to be a Jedi in real life, but you get the idea. So,
oh yeah, I'm just teasing you.
I know, it's what it is. So, Biggs Darklighter, you were a wonderful X-Wing pilot, and I hope to see you in Rebels. We're racing Wedge and Hobby, so hopefully Biggs makes an appearance sometimes in Rebels. I don't want to get into any EU stuff with Biggs, but if you're an EU fan and you're a fan of Biggs, go ahead and tweet at us on Twitter, because I'm a big fan of it, and I'm glad to geek out and talk about Gavin Darklighter and his legacy. Donnie, is there anything, or Caitlin, anything about Biggs that I've skipped over? I know we don't have him on screen very much.
It's still too soon. Too soon.
I
will say his helmet's like the coolest helmet that of all the Rebel pilots, because of that checker pattern.
So also his scarf. He has the coolest scar in those deleted scenes. That is some swagger right there.
If he had lived long enough, him and Lando could have been friends. Can you just imagine them like walking into a bar? Biggs and Lando walks in. So here, it's not a joke. Biggs and Lando walk into a bar. What happens
next? They clean up.
They do. Like, it's just like, oh man.
Maybe that's
with that the mustache
story. Maybe that's
that the mustache
side we're getting after the Han Solo movie.
Oh man, Biggs and Lando. A Biggs and Lando cartoon would be amazing. Biggs and Lando with that mustache on both of them. Oh man.
In the deleted scene where Biggs is like, "Oh yeah, I know these friends that are going to help me get out." Maybe one of them's Lando.
You never know. All cuz of Tosche Station, you know. Got some power converters. Oh man.
The Biggs, other thing that I actually think would be really nice to see is a little bit about how Biggs and Luke became friends.
Ooh.
Oh dude, the adventures of Biggs Darklighter and Luke Skywalker together.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
I want that.
Dude, on Tatooine, like, can you like so here's the thing, is like there's a lot of EU big stuff. Like there's comics of him like when he's a kid and stuff like that, and Luke's a kid, like I could just imagine them being like the kids that have like walkie-talkies on these two moisture farms on Tatooine, you know, flying their ships, shooting womp rats. Like, come on. It's like the farm. Yeah, man, it'd just be so much fun to see
Biggs. Kids who always find trouble, essentially.
Yeah, that's what it is. Like, and then you have that one guy who's always looking out for them to save them, which is Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it would just be so good. Anyway, Biggs, you were gone too soon. But you did, you know, you gave us, you saved our buddy Luke, who, you know, is the last Jedi, and will, you know, the father of Rey, so.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we need a big emoticon.
A big emoticon? It's a guy with a mustache. That's all you need. Anyway, anything else, guys, that we skipped over with Biggs?
No.
I will say, Luke said to Biggs when they left in the deleted scene, "Take it easy, buddy. You'll always be the best friend I ever had."
No, don't. Aww. I'm going to die.
Could be the best friend I ever had.
Why would you do that? Canceled. What? Mikey, you're canceled. Get out.
Here, it's permanently in Discord now. Take it easy, buddy. You'll be the best friend I ever had. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at our radio podcast, or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And take it easy, buddy. You'll always be the best friend I ever had. May the Force be with you.
but not with you.
I was waiting for that.